Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This is Series 3, Episode 9, and this one is all about Greece.
All right, guys, how are we all doing? Thanks for listening to another episode. And this is a big one because this is the first episode that we are recording all about our big round-the-world trip. And I'm really looking forward to talking about Greece.
Yes, yeah, so at the moment we are currently sitting in Alexandria, which is in the north of Egypt. And it's one of our last days here. Soon we're going to be heading to Jordan.
Yeah, so of course we're just recording wherever we can on the road. So we might be in a little bit of an echoey hotel room, but this is our studio for today. This is all we've got, so bear with us, guys.
So I'm not sure if you follow us on Instagram or not, but in the past few days here in Egypt, we have someone attempted to scam us. We have had a crazy Frenchman shouting in our hotel room and lots of other things as well. So make sure you follow us on Instagram. It's What the Faux Podcast if you need to look us up. And make sure you check out our stories because it's quite an eventful trip already.
Well, we like to show the ups and downs of travel.
Now, coming up on this episode about Greece, we're going to have, of course, game show facts. We've got language lessons with Konstantinos. We're going to be talking about Santorini, the island of Syros, Athens, also ferries and how you can get around the different islands. We're going to cover ancient history, the Parthenon, Acropolis, the amphitheatre. We're going to talk about a refugee hotel as well, so stay tuned for that. We have a new feature towards the end of the show, Fobservations, that's the name of it. And of course, our game this month is called Greek or Tweet. We're going to hear some quotes. Is it a Greek philosopher or is it a tweet? So let's kick off with the show.
This episode is sponsored by Storyteller, the travel accessories company that helps provide access to a quality education for individuals in less privileged areas of the world.
Nick, do we have shout-outs and or hate mail?
We have both.
Oh dear.
Let's start off with the hate mail.
Okay.
You've got no friends. If you want some, I'll give it you.
It's actually not that bad. It's fine, really. It's hardly hate mail. But Alan Chan got in touch. He emailed us and he pointed out a mistake that I had made. And I realised I'd made this mistake once the episode had already been uploaded. And I was really gutted, but I just hope no one would notice. I said that the capital of Scotland was Glasgow. And it's not. He said, basically, I love the show. It was a really nice email. But he said, but Nick, the capital of Scotland is Edinburgh. And I replied saying, I know you're correct. I'm sorry. But well done for noticing it. And I'm very sorry. I'll always hold my hands up if I make a mistake.
Yeah, it's quite good, really, because you're pointing out our mistakes and keeping us on our toes. So it's good. At least you're listening, because all the other people that didn't point it out, it just went, they either didn't know or they weren't listening.
Yeah, come on, guys. You need to be better than this. But yeah, Alan, really nice guy, and he said that he enjoys the show. So thanks for getting in touch.
Thanks, Alan.
So should we go to the shout outs?
Yes, let's do it.
Here we go. Hobo Traveller on Instagram. He got in touch. He said he loves the show and he is a long-term listener. I've actually been enjoying a lot of his pictures travelling around India. Thanks very much for getting in touch. We also heard from Mark Dickinson, aka Marky Travels, on Instagram. He said that we'd inspired him to hitchhike. And he'd done this for the first time because of us.
Aww.
And he said that he had a great experience.
Do we know what country he was in?
I think New Zealand. Again, I've seen a lot of his pictures on Instagram in New Zealand. So I think that's where he was.
Nice. Nice work.
So thanks, Mark, for getting in touch. We also heard from Marissa from Toronto. She asked us on Instagram if we'd be talking about more budget traveling tips and like cheap airfare, stuff like that. And it was good timing because only a couple of months ago, our mini episode about points and air miles came out. And we've also done an episode, of course, with Paddy from The Budgeteers. She then went on to say that she is mesmerized by our podcast.
Good word.
Woo!
Thank you.
Thanks, Marissa. We also had a cracking email from Nima from Iran.
Oh, I remember this one.
So Nima emailed us to say, I recently started listening to your podcast. Nima went on to say that the first podcast they listened to was Uruguay and loved it. From now on, your podcast is on the top of my list to listen when I'm on my way to work, like on the commute. I'm looking forward to listening to more of your podcast. Please keep it up.
Oh, thanks so much, Nima. That's amazing.
Thank you so much for the email. It's something about an email. It's kind of almost like a letter. It's more personal, isn't it? I do like an email.
I remember when we set up What the Faux right at the start and we'd started up our email account, and for days after, it was so weird. You were just like, I just want to get an email. And I just didn't really get that.
Yeah. But we also heard from Beth from Amy's Old Work.
Oh, Beth.
She's like our new number one fan at the moment.
Fan and critic, which that's I love, true. By the way. She gives us great, she sends videos basically saying what was good and what could need more work and things like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, but she's been going through all of our episodes lately, giving us very good feedback and enjoying the show. So Beth, thank you so much.
Miss you.
We also heard from Fleeky Blinder on Instagram, aka Gertcha. Is that a real name? I'm not sure. A nickname?
Awesome Instagram name.
Fleeky Blinder. He gave us some good tips on Syros, where obviously we were staying. Yes. We're going to be talking about that soon. And said that he loves the show. Keep it up. That is it for the shout outs. Thank you so much to everyone that gets in touch. We always say this, but it's really nice to hear from you guys.
Lovely. Now it's time for Game Show Facts. Nick, have you got your little intro to it?
Have I got my intro? It should be something Greek, really. I tell you what, let's put in a Greek smashing plate noise now. The official name for Greece is not even Greece. It's the Hellenic Republic. The population of Greece is around 11 million and the capital is Athens. Situated in the far southeast of Europe, Greece is one of the Balkan countries. Greece has towering mountains on the mainland and over 1,400 islands, the largest of which is Crete. Greece is famous for its ancient literature, art, philosophy, and politics. It's one of the most important countries in the history of Western civilization. It's considered to be the birthplace of democracy. The ancient Greeks were a sophisticated bunch, and this was around 500 to 800 BC. The ancient Greek age is considered to have ended when the Romans later invaded in 146 BC. Famous Greek philosophers include Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. The Olympic Games originated in Athens, in Greece. Tourism is one of the major contributors to the economy because of the sunny climate most of the year. Speaking of economy, the global financial crisis of the late 2000s had a devastating effect on Greece. High public spending and widespread tax evasion, combined with the global recession, left this country with crippling debt. The island of Ikaria is one of the world's blue zones where people have the longest lifespans. At traditional Greek weddings, everyone dances and smashes plates. The saying, taking the bull by the horns, comes from the Greek myth of Hercules saving Crete from a raging bull, and reports claim that Greeks have sex on average 164 times a year, and this makes them the most sexually active nation in the world.
Great facts, Nick. I really enjoyed those ones.
No prizes for guessing which one you're going to pick up on.
Yes, you can think I'm going to pick up the sex one. But I just want to say, out of all the game show facts and episodes we've ever done, I think that's the one that I knew most of the facts already.
Interesting.
So I guess I'm feeling quite intelligent right now. But yeah, the sex one, of course, I'm going to pick up on that. That's something we learned when we were... Did our host tell us that, Konstantinos?
No, our tour guide, who you'll hear... The walking tour guide, who you will hear from later.
Ah, yes.
But what I'm thinking about this... Okay, so we've done... Well, I've done the maths. For what I said, how many times they have sex a year, on average, that's about once every 3 days, okay?
Yeah, so it doesn't sound as much, does it?
Which doesn't sound like a lot. And there'll be a lot of people out there, mainly blokes, who will say, what? Once every 3 days, that's nothing. I'm every day, mate. You all know who you are.
And yeah, by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Masturbating doesn't count. So think about it, but that's on average, right? That means, okay, there are Greek people that do it less, but that means there are Greek people that do it more. That means there must be quite a large portion of Greek people who have sex every day.
Or they're lying.
Or they're lying, but...
Who would tell the truth on a test or, like, some sort of survey?
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah, you're right. How do you really truthfully measure that? But that I think that's a lot. When you actually think about it, if someone is actually having sex every day, that's a lot.
Okay, we'll just tell our sex life on air.
Everyone would admit, I don't care who you are, everyone would admit that's a lot.
Okay, right, I've got a mini game for you, spontaneous game. Okay, you've got four options. If you were writing down, if you had to take this survey, how many times do you have sex? So, you know, This might be not just with me. I don't know. We are married, if anyone didn't know that. So you got four options. Every day is option number one. Would you tick that box? Number two is twice a week. Number three is three times a month. And number four is never.
I honestly think most people, I would pick on average, like twice a week, on average, because there are going to be weeks that are worse and there are weeks that are better. But I'm talking about on average.
Yeah.
Do you not think?
Yeah. No, well, yeah, I'm asking what you would put down.
Right. There you go.
Twice a week?
Oh my God, we share way too much. I was talking about my credit card debt on a couple of episodes
ago. That's so true.
Let's move on.
Okay, right. So that was Game Show Facts. Brilliant work there. Oh, and also the one I didn't know was that Crete was the biggest island. Didn't know that.
Yes, it is. I have been there as well.
Yeah, you have when you were younger.
Yeah.
Okay. You liked it, did you?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, cool. Language lessons, not with Amy this month. It's with Konstantinos. So Konstantinos was our couch surfing host in Athens, and he was the absolute dude of dudes, wasn't he?
Yeah, a legend. I feel like I say it's a lot about a couch surfing host, but maybe we're just lucky. But he is exactly what you want from a couch surfing host. By the way, we'll hear more from him later in the episode, but funny guy, clever as well. He was like cracking jokes in English that like we didn't get.
Yeah.
Went over our head.
Yeah, he was, because he was saying a lot of like Monty Python jokes and stuff, which, yeah, we're British, we should know what that is, but it's not really our thing, is it? It's kind of above our age range.
There are two things people always say to us from around the world when they know we're from England. They say Monty Python, that was way before our time, so we don't really know what it is, and the Beatles.
Yeah.
But again,
which was actually before our time.
Exactly, before our time.
So we're young people, so stop talking to us about this. Yeah, so Konstantinos, now he is going to give us a little language lesson. We asked him the simple, basic, how do you say hello?
Yeah, which actually translates to health in a sort of abbreviated way.
And I kind of know this one, but how do you say thank you?
Ευχαριστώ.
Which we've had a lot of issues with, haven't we, Nick? What was the thing you said in the...
Well, you know how in some countries where you try and make an effort and people smile and say, oh, you know, they like it. When I try and say, Ευχαριστώ, people laugh at me.
Yeah, but it's because the first time at the start you were saying Ευχαριστώ.
Yeah, Ευχαριστώ, I think.
There's a small linguistic difference to be found there. So we don't have a H sound, that's clear. All of the sounds are he. So it's like Ευχαριστώ, it's not Ευχαριστώ, that people would say in Central or Northern Europe.
Ευχαριστώ.
Yeah, it's like that.
Ευχαριστώ.
The word hand is χέρι, it's not χέρι.
Okay, how would you say please?
Παρακαλώ. Which also translates to you're welcome. You can use it as a request. Λίγο νερό παρακαλώ, some water please. Or thank you, Ευχαριστώ, παρακαλώ. It's like that. Thank you, you're welcome.
Παρακαλώ.
Παρακαλώ.
Παρακαλώ. Also, the other day you were saying about, depends what, how you want to say something. So rather than pass me the water, you say water, please. Like that?
Yeah, you can say that. You can say that. Λίγο νερό, παρακαλώ. Or you can skip using articles. Mm. Some languages are very bound to using articles. That's why you will hear that I might not put a definite or an indefinite article in front of a noun in English. Because this is what we as native speakers have. Or you will start it with a noun. Water, I want. It's like Master Yoda or something. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was Greek, apparently.
And so how many characters do you have in the alphabet?
There are 24 characters. And we have a lot of variations regarding E, like diphthongs, things that coincide and create different E sounds that were actually could be distinguished in ancient Greek, but they cannot be anymore. Because language has a tendency to become more economic, faster, easier. That's how languages evolve. It's like, you know, you made the analogy with the Shakespearean language. Nobody can maketh sense out of it.
Very, very good.
I like that.
Another word I want to know. Yeah, how do you say sorry?
Signomi, but it's also sorry and excuse me.
Okay.
So we've heard that a lot on the trains when people want to get past.
That's true. And if you want to order a beer, say like, can I have a beer, please?
Εγώ θέλω μια μπύρα. It's like, I want a beer.
Can you say that one more time, a bit slower?
Θέλω μια μπύρα.
Θέλω μια μπύρα.
Θέλω. It doesn't even have like, it's not even I want. It's like, want a beer.
Okay. But beer is μπύρα.
Μπύρα, yes.
Παρακαλώ. That is definitely my favourite word. I think it just rolls off the tongue really nicely. But I still don't think we're saying thank you right. Ευχαριστώ.
Ευχαριστώ. It's tough, man. And I was so surprised because a lot of British people go to Greece on holiday like we do Spain. But we all know a bit of Spanish, don't we?
Yeah.
I knew zero Greek. And it's quite a tough language, isn't it?
It definitely is. I think actually, out of everywhere we've been, it's been the one that surprised me the most on its difficulty because, yeah, I love language and I find it quite easy to remember words and things, but this I found really difficult.
Now, a separate day when we were with Konstantinos, on the topic of language, he also gave us a lesson in how to swear in Greek.
You need to have your stops, you need to inhale and then spit it out. Γάμο το μουνί που σέφτησε πάλι μαλάκια, γάμισου. You need to put some style into that, you cannot, cast like a normie, you know?
So what did he just say?
Γάμο το μουνί της μάνας, which means I fuck your mom's pussy. not your mom's, you know, in general. It's an expression, it's a saying.
Yeah.
It's like, good morning, John Boy.
It's a saying.
Yeah, it's a saying.
What's the, like, the most offensive thing you can say to someone?
Γαμώ το μουνί που σέφτησε. I fuck the pussy that spat you out.
Wow, there you go. That's educational.
Oh, God. It was so funny, wasn't he, Konstantinos? He absolutely made our trip.
Yeah, absolute legend. But luckily for all of us, you'll hear more from him later.
Right, so let's talk about our trip. So we flew into Santorini, just kind of a brief guide. We flew into Santorini. We then headed over to the island of Syros, and then we went to the mainland, or where the capital is, Athens. So we didn't get to go to all of the islands. I think that would be pretty much impossible. Yep. That would be our world trip over. So yeah, throughout this month or whenever you're listening to this, we would love to hear from you if you've been to any of the other islands. We are going to be hearing from another host that we had from Airbnb talking about island life as well, because like I said, we couldn't cover everything. But let's start with Santorini. So looking at the map, we were staying in Akrotiri, which is kind of down the south of the island, and Thera is the capital of the island, and then another main place you have there is Ia. So Ia is the kind of famous sunset Instagram spot that you've seen where everyone talks about a Santorini sunset. That's in Ia, and it's spelled O-I-A.
Yeah, and that is the reason why people go to Santorini. Good way of putting it, regular listener, he's got quite a few shout outs. Andy McElwain said that is the number one Instagram princess spot. But yeah, that is why people go. And I guess that's why we went. You get the view of all the kind of the white and blue houses on the cliffs, and you got the sea and the sunset. And it is spectacular. Like you said, Amy, we stayed in Akrotiri because that's the cheap part of the island.
Yeah.
But you can get a bus. I think it was like €2 one way. You can get a bus to Thera, the capital. And then you can also get a bus further on to Ia. Oia? I always get that wrong.
Ia.
Ia. So actually, it's quite easy to get around. You can hire a car in Santorini, but I've been told there is no parking because how busy is the island?
Yeah, actually, everybody's kind of running around, or not running around, driving around on quad bikes. Yeah, so that seems like quite a popular way to do it. And we did inquire, but then we found out that the bus was €2. So it's just so much cheaper. I think it was about, was it like €20 for the day to hire a quad bike?
I think
it was
more 30.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of like our daily budget. So if anybody's wondering about a world trip, we're kind of basing everything on £30 a day. That includes our accommodation, our food, our activities and all of that, which has been relatively easy to stick to, actually, because we've been doing couch surfing, which obviously is free, and not eating as much as we normally would have. We've already lost weight, but, you know, sacrifices to travel around the world. Yeah, so we're sticking to about £30 English pounds a day. So we opted with the bus, and it was really good, wasn't it?
It was absolutely fine. The bus was busy, as you'd expect, getting to Oia.
Ia.
Ia, oh my God, come on, Nick. Getting to Ia for the sunset, because everyone wants to do the same thing. But it was still fine. We got there eventually. And great budgeteers tip. You'll find that there are people who have paid a lot of money to sit in a restaurant with a good view of the sunset. We bought a cheap bottle of wine from a little supermarket.
A little kiosk.
Found a little spot on a wall, which was right next to a restaurant where people would have paid a lot of money. And we had a perfectly good view of a sunset, bottle of wine. And that's Santorini, like, done cheaply. So, yeah, you know, it can be done, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget to take some cups with you, because it doesn't look that classy when you're drinking out of the bottle itself. We did actually bring cups.
Yeah. But you'd agree, even though it was very busy, Ia, you'd agree, is good. Like, it's worth it.
Oh, it's beautiful. And, like, we were there just outside of the main season, I'd say, because we were there in September.
Yeah.
And it was still quite busy. There was only one point where we was all in, like, people traffic and actually couldn't move anywhere. And that was just kind of at the end where people were walking away. But, yeah, no, it's absolutely fine. I can imagine in the high season, though, it's absolutely ridiculous. But it's probably still worth going.
Yeah, but the main traffic of people is because of the cruise ships, isn't it? It's not even people staying on the island, because 3 or 4 cruise ships come a day and drop a load of people off for the sunset. But yeah, it's fine. I think as long as you go there expecting it to be busy, then you won't get annoyed.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had just a little food talk here. So obviously we're traveling on a budget, so we couldn't go to the sit-down restaurants in Santorini. We found a really cheap gyros place. So if you don't know what that is, it's kind of like a pita bread filled with meat and chips and really good, like, garlicky sauce. You've got some vegetables in there, some tomatoes and things like that. It's really, really good. Really nice and filling. Perfect if you're on a budget. I think we paid €4 for a gyros.
€4 each, cheap bottle of wine and a free sunset. So that's not bad.
Yeah. And so if you want to find this place, it's off the... So you have the main road, which goes all along the coast, which you would walk along for the sunset. It's a couple of roads back from the cliffs. And it actually has a restaurant, but you can take away as well. But I would really recommend it, guys. It's a really amazing place.
For sure. I'd also recommend the capital of Santorini, Thera. It actually looked a bit similar to Ia, didn't it? I still thought it was a nice town. It looked good.
I would say I preferred Ia. I think it was really beautiful. So if you want to stay in Akrotiria, where we stayed, you get the bus to Thera, and then you go through Thera and get on a different bus and you go to Ia. So Ia is kind of at the top. But yeah, Thera is in the middle. Thera is more kind of the commercial side, where you'll find all the shops, all the restaurants and things like that, where Ia, further up the top, is more calm. You still have restaurants and stuff, but it's way more classy, I'd say.
Yeah, that's true. But it's still a nice place. You can see why a lot of people go there. My main concern with the island, though, was, like, yeah, the buildings and everything, and the sunset looks beautiful. The island itself is just kind of like a brown, dry island, isn't it? There's no vegetation or anything. So I thought that part of it wasn't very attractive.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes some of the beaches that they have, because there's not many, makes them not very attractive looking, because it's dark stone. So the sand isn't kind of what you imagine of a Greek beach, is kind of white, yellowy sand. But this was dark brown sand.
That's a very good point. Santorini's not famous for beaches, is
No,
it?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And also another thing I want to point out is it's quite famous for being a honeymoon spot. I'm not sure I would have enjoyed that to the max if I'd gone there for my honeymoon. I don't want to discourage anyone from going there, because it's still beautiful. But for me personally, it's not something I would want for my honeymoon, because it's really, you're short on space. Everything, the buildings are just kind of all pummeled together. And I just think for your honeymoon, you want some space and private time, and you want to go to the beach and things. Well, that's what I want from a honeymoon. So if we'd gone there, I wouldn't have been fully happy with it.
I completely agree. What we did, something like the Maldives on your own island, that's what I think you should do.
We didn't have our own island.
Well, we pretty much did. All right, the resort, the hotel, whatever you want to call it, we were staying in.
We're not that rich, guys. Traveling around the world and we own an island.
Yeah, but that wasn't the honeymoon. That's a one-off for sure. But I agree, Santorini. Plus, I don't think there's actually much to do and see there. I reckon once you've been there for like 3 or 4 days...
I think that's too much. I'd say 2 to 3 days.
Exactly.
You can go on a nice walk. There's some really nice designer shops there. I mean, you'll be spending a lot of money.
Yeah, but it is expensive. So we were there, I think, 3 days. And after that, I was done. I was glad to move on.
Yeah, absolutely. in which we moved on to Syros. Now, Syros was our favourite island out of the two, wasn't it? It's far more local. There is tourism there, but a lot less, definitely, compared to Santorini. Far more local, really got a completely different vibe to Santorini. And like our host, Daniela, who we'll be hearing from shortly, she says that every island has a completely different feel to it. You can see it in the architecture. And I think it's all down to years ago who invaded each island, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Every island has a different identity because, yeah, at one point it had different rulers and invaders. But Syros, for sure, was very different, and that's what we wanted. After 3 days in Santorini, we wanted a change of scene, and we stayed in the old town called Anno Syros. It's like an old medieval town, and cars can't get up there. Very thin, narrow walkways. Looks amazing, doesn't it?
It really does. And so, yeah, like you said, it's Anno Syros, and me just loving language, I was trying to work out what that means. Because in Spanish, an or año means like year or old. So I thought that meant old Syros. Makes perfect sense.
Makes sense.
We then found out that Anno actually means height or above. So it just means Syros up above.
And that makes sense as well, because it was on a hill.
Yeah. It was kind of like those old things that you see where... Yeah, like where to stop Ireland being invaded, they went up, didn't they, with their castles. And the castle's at the top and you have kind of moats and everything protecting it. King of the castle, all that at the top. So it's exactly like that really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was stunning. Really charming little place. You will get lost many times walking around the roads and the steps. It's quite hard to navigate. Took us a while to find our Airbnb. But when we found it, what a nice... old traditional little house, and we had a good 3 days there, didn't we?
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. So I would recommend anyone, if you wanted to stay in Anno Syros, go there when you want to relax and get away from things, because in the little town there was one taverna to eat in and one little shop, which I'm not sure is open all of the time, because a few times we walked past it was closed. But it was such a good way to get away from life. And just, I'd imagine if you're a writer, is the perfect place to go.
Yes, good shout.
Yeah, and so our apartment, or well, not apartment, it was like a little crooked house. It was beautiful. So the kitchen was on the outside in its own little mini house.
Yeah.
And then you go inside, you've got the lounge, and then you travel downstairs for your bedroom, like into the cave. It's almost like going into a cave.
Yeah, it was.
It was amazing. You would have seen it on our stories if you follow us. And also on our Patreon, we are releasing update videos now. So if you want to see all of this, then you head to our Patreon and then you'll be able to see our videos. We're putting up one a month. And yeah, so that's all in the video. And it honestly was amazing. So Anno Syros is a place, just windy roads. Imagine like old Italian kind of back streets, you know, where no cars, no horses, none of that.
Yep.
And it's just all crooked. And we were saying it's actually kind of a posh, rich favela. And I really don't want that to come over as offensive, but it is literally structured like a favela. But
completely agree.
Built with real, like proper materials.
Yeah, everything was kind of, it looked like it was built on top of each other. You're right, exactly like a favela, but all just very nicely done and beautiful. We did have to walk into the capital of Syros, Ermopoli, to buy groceries, because like you said, there's only a tiny shop there, which wasn't really open most of the time. But it's doable. You can walk into the capital from Anno Syros, which we did, bought our groceries, and then we were set for the next few days.
Yeah, and it was absolutely perfect. And also, if you're a writer, this would be a great place for you. And also, if you're a photographer, because it's the most photogenic place ever. And actually, do you remember while we were there, there was those people that walked past us and they were having some sort of photo shoot or something? A whole big team of makeup artists and all of that walked past us. And it was just such a beautiful place. I couldn't recommend it enough.
And because we were at the top, great views of the rest of the island. So that was great. We really, really enjoyed our time there. And then we moved on, but we stayed on the island of Syros. We went to the other side, to a place called Kinney, a small little beach town. And we had like a week just to relax on the beach. And we were so lucky with the weather. Bearing in mind, it's October. I know Greece is sunny most of the year, but we had great weather. And we just enjoyed a week by the beach. There's nothing really much more we can say about it. It's not interesting for the podcast or for any videos, but we had a great time, didn't we?
Yeah, and it was, again, still nice and quiet. There was just local people there. I don't think we saw another English person there. I don't think, anyway.
No,
there was definitely
so.
Other nationalities as well, but not English. And yeah, it was just really lovely just to kind of the first part of the trip, we'd been working so hard and saving, we just needed to calm down, and that was just perfect for us to get away. And yeah, and Kinney was just lovely.
And we're very lucky because our Airbnb host for Kinney, who you're going to hear from soon, Daniela, she picked us up from Anosyros. It's, to be fair, it's only like a 15, 20 minute drive. It's not a very big island, but very nice of her. She picked us up and she even then took us back to Ermopoli, the capital, where we had to get our ferry when we were going to leave. So shall we hear from Daniela now about island life?
Yeah, let's hear from Daniela. So we wanted to ask her how different island life is compared to mainland Greece.
Very different. I don't think there is much in common, to be honest, because living on an island has, first of all, this situation of being isolated. Being isolated creates a different atmosphere and also a different way of thinking. You have to be more centered on what's going around, and you're much closer to your surrounding and to the people around you. It's a place you cannot escape, which means you have to be in a very good relationship with your own person and with the others around in order to take the island life. Otherwise you suffer from a so-called island crisis.
Okay, and so we're on Syros now. Mm-hmm. And before we were talking when we first arrived, and you said that every island has its own little quirks and it's all quite different. So what makes Syros different?
Definitely the historical conditions, but this takes too long to go into details. But Syros has a history which is not very common for the other islands. Being under the occupations of Venetians, having this Catholic culture, and furthermore being the center of the Cyclades, it's the trading center, it always has been the trading center, and we have an urban area and an urban culture. The other islands are just rural, depending on fishing and agriculture or tourism, whereas Syros always had a very independent structure, infrastructure and economy.
And the buildings look quite different to somewhere like Santorini as well, doesn't it?
Exactly, absolutely. Because this is also due to the history that we have this Italian, I would say, character and the colors and the building. It's a neoclassical building style, not only in Hermopolis, but also in many villages.
So in the last like 10 years, like Greece, like the economy has been in a lot of trouble. But do you think the islands have been okay because of tourism?
Some definitely are those who are medium touristic. Those who are very touristic have suffered a lot, which sounds paradox, but if you consider the fact that most of the big hotels are not in Greek hands, then you see the winners of that big touristic boom were like German companies or other countries. The very small islands are more or less the same, like the islands of 100 inhabitants or 200. And the islands of the medium size, the popular ones, that are doing quite well through tourism.
So out of all of the other islands, which ones would you recommend? If someone was coming here for a trip or a holiday, which ones are the best places to go?
Since every island has a very special character, and then you have to see the person, and it depends on what the person is like, and then you would recommend the island. If you tell me what kind of person, I could help you.
So, if somebody wants to party?
To party. That's Mykonos and Ios.
Okay.
Ios, low budget.
History and culture?
Syros. Maybe Amorgos.
Okay.
And how about someone who wants to go on like a honeymoon?
The best island to get married, I was told, is Kithnos, and I think it's perfect for a honeymoon.
And finally, just an island to relax and enjoy the sun.
Okay, my favorites: Anafi, near Santorini, Donousa, near Naxos. I guess those two.
There you go. So depending on what kind of person you are, there is an island for you. So thank you so much for that, Daniela. That was our Airbnb host, who was incredibly intelligent, and she's actually German.
She is, yeah, from Germany, but she lives and loves life in Syros, and I can see why.
So one of the best ways to go from island to island, obviously you can fly, but that can get quite expensive. But there are ferries in Greece, and there's a brilliant website that we used, and this is no endorsement from them or anything like that. It's just a website that we used and found helpful, was Ferries in Greece.
It was very good. Very easy to plan a route. You can do like several islands you want to go to, and they find you the cheapest ferries, basically. And believe me, we tried to work with them. I actually had a conversation with them a lot about, can we work together, collaborate? And they were having none of it, but we still used their service and they still were pretty good. Even when we had a ferry cancelled to get to Santorini, long story short, we flew instead. They let us know a few days before, your ferry's going to be cancelled, so you better sort out plans, and they gave us a refund straight away.
Yeah, straight away. Like, it was really quick and we barely even had to ask, and they'd given our money back. So yeah, kudos to them. I've never said that sentence in my life. But on the other hand, ferry experiences in Greece are quite an activity, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess. I think we had the cheapest ticket. Not the most comfortable. Oh, but you're talking about when you first get on the ferry.
No, I'm talking about getting on a ferry in Greece. So it's so strange. You're standing at the port. Everybody's got their bags. And then they have police there, as well as like security guards. Yeah, they're standing there, and then the ferry arrives from wherever it's come from. Those people get off. Then it's literally dog eat dog. It's crazy.
Yeah, the police just say, go. And everyone just runs on. What did it remind you of?
It reminded me of an episode on Friends where Monica is trying to buy her wedding dress and she goes with Phoebe and Rachel and they have the whistles. And we couldn't understand why people were trying to get on so quick, because when we got on our first ferry, we found seats fine. But we were actually sitting in the first class seats when we had a standard
by
ticket.
By accident. We didn't realise we were in the wrong seats the whole time.
I thought everybody just had a seat, but no. Other people, if you just buy a standard ticket, then you either walk around the ferry or find a caf that will sit, like, have a seat for you.
Or sit on the floor.
Yeah, or sit on the floor. It's, but honestly, it was so strange when people were getting so aggressive. And then you walk onto the boat in the lower platform, you put your bags in, like, some racks, and then you walk upstairs to the actual ferry. But do you remember what happened on the first one?
No.
I had an argument with that woman, didn't I?
Oh my God, yeah.
So we're trying to find, and everybody's rushing, which then makes you think, oh, I have to rush. And so I was a bit like on edge. So I'm walking to the racks, and then I saw some space up at the back, and we've got two small backpacks. We haven't got like massive suitcases. So we walked around and I said, oh, Nick, there's some space here, and taking my bag off. And this woman looks at me and she goes, no, I've just cleared this space for that, not you. And I went, whoa, okay, calm down. You just had to say that to me politely. I didn't realise you had the space and I would have moved. And she looked at me and she was like, what was it she said? I am being polite.
I think you said, no need to be rude. And she was like, I'm not, you're being rude.
And I was like, oh my God, you're raising your voice at me. And I have no idea why. Like, you just had to say, please, like, I've got this space. And I would have been like, okay, fine, I'll go somewhere else. But then she was just, being very aggressive.
Amy was ready for a fight.
I was so ready at this point, like, don't get in the way of me when I'm traveling. But no, she was very rude. And if you're listening, I hate you. So just be prepared when you get on to a ferry, because people want to run on, get their bags on, get upstairs and get a seat before anybody else. And it's dog eat dog.
Good tip. All right, should we talk about Athens?
Actually think this was our favourite place, wasn't it?
It was. And I've actually heard from people before we went to Athens, people have told me, don't bother, it's not very nice. But I thought, yeah, but those are the kind of places that I like, where there's a lot going on, it's a bit rough and ready, loads of history. And fortunately, on this occasion, I was right. Like, we both really enjoyed Athens.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. And yeah, I've heard people say that they don't really like Athens, it's quite a dirty city. So yeah, it's a bit dusty, but I actually found it incredibly clean.
Most of it was. And even where we stayed of Konstantinos, a bit out of the centre, you're thinking, oh, those neighbourhoods might be a bit rough. His neighbourhood was really nice.
Really nice. And there's loads of places to eat, really good restaurants, really good food in Athens.
Cheap as well. So yeah, great food and very cheap. Metro to get around. Unlimited travel on the metro and all the buses for 5 days was €9.
How cheap is that? I can't believe how cheap it is. So yeah, transport's cheap. You can get really good cheap food. We went on a free walking tour, OVS.
Classic.
at the end of it, the guide recommended we went to this restaurant. And I think a lot of tours do that where they kind of get some sort of commission or they can eat for free or something like that. Yeah. That's fine, whatever, that works for us. But we went there because it was so cheap. So it was 10 euros for unlimited food and unlimited wine.
AKA, as they called it, Greek water. This guy kept bringing jugs of red wine and he said, here's your Greek water. Like, I'm on board.
And it was probably a little bit watered down, if we're honest.
Yeah.
But it was still good.
So yes, we're going to hear from our walking tour guide, Kelly, now. So we're in Greece. We've got to talk about Greek gods, okay? She told us that there are 12 of them, and these are the ancient Greek gods, of course. Now, stories about them would be very much at home on like a reality TV show. So people who are listening now in the US, kind of like a Jersey Shore kind of thing, people from the UK like us, Made in Chelsea, people cheating on each other or someone being in love with their sister, like kind of stories like that. So we asked Kelly to start off with a juicy story about the ancient Greek gods.
I'll tell you guys a story about God Hephaestus, who was one of the most ugliest gods. So he had this big hunchback and he was cross-eyed and he had a limp and he was married to the goddess of beauty, Aphrodite. Now this was a fixed marriage that she did not want to be part of. She did cheat on him with all gods except for Zeus, who was her father. One of the most known love stories is with God Ares, who was the god of war. So because God Hephaestus was actually suspicious of this, he built an invisible net to catch them into action and had God Helios, which is the sun, spy on them and catch them, which actually did happen and they were busted in action. So because God Ares knew that this was going to happen again, he hired a guard named Alectrios, which he had to warn them when the sun is going to come, and he fell asleep. So God Ares got very, very angry and turned him into a rooster. And this is why the rooster warns you every morning that the sun is coming, basically for people not to cheat.
Yeah, and also on the tour, you told us a story about ejaculation. Can you explain a little further for me?
Well, that's another story. It is actually God Hephaestus, which was the same god that we were talking about before. And what happened with him is he was crazy obsessed with his sister, goddess Athena. So he would chase after her all the time and try to have sex with her, and she did not want to. So at some point, because he was so obsessed with her, he ejaculated on her leg. And what was dripping from her leg would actually create the land and nature in Athens. So there is a temple dedicated to that, basically meaning the land that we are on, which is their child named Erechtheos, which comes from the word erection.
Right, okay.
I guess as we're on the topic, there's another thing you mentioned on the tour about Greek orgies. So like, so
quite a sexual tour.
It was. So the ancient Greeks, I guess for their time, they were very open about sexuality. Like it didn't really matter if it was a man with a man or a woman with a woman. So yeah, can you explain about that?
During that time in general, what happened is that, especially during the festivals of Dionysus, where it was a wine festival and they would gather there four times a year, men only would gather at that time.
Women weren't allowed up there,
right? No, they weren't allowed in there, yeah. But sexuality was something that was very open for the ancient Greeks. So it didn't matter if it was a man with a man or a woman with a woman. They found it that you can express your sexuality any way you want. So there you can also see like younger men with older men or younger women with older women. It was something that was allowed and natural at that time compared to, let's say, today's standards. Although they are open about sexuality, it's not in that immense, let's say, gathering as it was at that time where everybody was famous Greek orgies that you see on TV, that there's like people literally everywhere doing each other everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's what would happen in the Theater of Dionysus, unfortunately, with wine and drinking and the festivals.
So if somebody doesn't have much time when they're in Athens, of course they should do your free walking tour. But what are the main things they should definitely do?
The main things definitely to do, if you don't have that much
listen
time.
Listen to music!
On the lovely streets of Athens. First of all, of course, take the New Athens free tour, which we do show you most of the most important sites that we do walk around. A must-see is the Acropolis and the Parthenon. It is basically the gem of the city. Other than that, there's a couple of museums. National Archaeological Museum has history from the longest of existence of a person in Greece. So it's over 8,000 square meters, though, keep in mind, so you do need a day to go through that one. But if you don't have that much time, the Acropolis Museum is also beautiful. It has marbles from the Acropolis, from the Parthenon, and it's a beautiful place to visit. But most of the sites are around covered around the Acropolis area. the major sites that you need to see.
Okay, and you said it is best for a tourist to buy a pass to get them into several attractions, is that right?
There's a pass that you can get instead of just paying for that one ticket to get up the Acropolis. There's a pass that it's 7 sites that you can visit for 5 days, and it costs 30 euros. If you're a student, it's half price. And if you're a European student, the sites are for free anyway, you don't pay. So it is something, even the Acropolis, it's something. So if you're going to be here for a few days, it is better to get the pass so you can visit a few more things than just going up to the Acropolis itself.
Yeah, because to do just that is 20 euros, so it's best just to add the other 10 and do the others. And cool. Okay, so if anybody wants to do your free walking tour, where do you meet and what time?
We meet at Monastiraki Square every morning around 20 after 10. They can either book, if they want, at newathensfreetour.com or through freetour.com, which is another website that we are featured on.
Thank you, Kelly Pontikakos, from that free walking tour there. I think that goes for an award for our most sexual interview.
My God, yeah. And it links into my Game Show facts as well at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
Talking about how they're the most sexual nation. I never knew that. I never knew Greeks were that sexual.
I don't know. I didn't actively know it, but I think now I do, it makes sense.
So Kelly was saying in that interview, she mentioned the Acropolis and Parthenon, okay? And yeah, that is the main thing to see and do when you're in Athens. The Acropolis is like a big rock in the centre of Athens, and on top of that is the Parthenon, which is like temple, ruins of an ancient Greek temple. And it looks stunning, like, it looks over the city because it's on a big rock, on a big hill, reminding me a bit like Christ the Redeemer in Rio.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
It looks similar.
It looks down on the city and it's quite impressive. You can see it for free from a bit of a distance, but pay the money to go up and go into it. It's well worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So it's 20 euros to go on that. And as Kelly was saying, you can buy a multiple ticket for 30 euros that will get you into 7 different sites. So rather than just paying 20 for one, you can pay 30 for 7, which is amazing. We did actually only do the 20 for one to see the Parthenon, but that's only because on the walking tour, we'd kind of walked around some of the other sites and we'd seen them from afar, and going that little bit closer wasn't worth paying an extra 10 euros, and we're on a budget.
Agree. And yeah, a lot of those attractions are museums. If you love museums, then it's going to be well worth it. It's not really our thing, so that's why we didn't go for the full 30 euro ticket.
But it's a very good deal. And also, I just want to say, it's such a nice walk up to the Parthenon. So you're walking up all the steps, and halfway up, you have a little bit of a museum, little artifacts and writing that you can read about what's what. And then you walk up a bit further and you actually reach the amphitheatre, which we went to 2 days after we'd seen the Parthenon. Mm. And you can still see live shows there today. I believe Sting played there not long ago. And it's just, honestly, guys, if you go to Athens, I would fully recommend, if you don't do anything else, to go see a show. So we went to go see the ballet because that's actually on my bucket list. So what better way to see the ballet than at the amphitheatre? We saw the Russian ballet as well.
We did. And yeah, like ballet, it's the first time I've ever seen it. I'll try, you know, almost anything once. But so it was a good experience. By the end, I was kind of glad when the ballet was over. But that, no, I'm being honest, but that was the best, most impressive venue I've ever been to.
It was amazing. It's just, you just feel like you're back in time and everybody sits. So obviously, you know what an amphitheatre looks like. And something that I found quite interesting was Greek amphitheatres are not in a full circle, they're only like a semicircle. Yet in Roman amphitheatres, so in Italy, there'll be a full circle. I thought that was quite interesting how it changed.
Is that because the semicircle's better for acoustics, but the full circle is just better for like visual? Is that right?
Maybe. It's probably along those lines.
I think so.
Right, so after that ballet chat, it's now time for our game, Greek or Tweet. Now, the aim of the game is for Nick to determine whether the sentence or quote that I read out is from a Greek philosopher or a tweet on Twitter.
Great, love it. And we thought of this because people, like nowadays, people like to think they're philosophers, don't they?
Absolutely, especially on social media, yeah. We'd like you to play along with us. If you can get out some sort of notepad, because act like it's the 1900s, or you can just do it on your phone. But let us know how many of these you get right. So we've got 10. That doesn't mean that we have 5 Greek philosophy quotes and 5 tweets. It's a mix to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. Number 1. To find yourself, think for yourself.
Ooh, wow. Greek or tweet?
Greek or tweet. Is that a Greek philosophy quote or a tweet on Twitter?
That sounds something very millennial. So I'm going to say that is a tweet.
That, in fact, is a Greek philosopher.
No, it sounds so modern.
I know. That was Socrates.
Ah, damn.
Okay, number two. And make sure, listeners, that you are keeping track of your score, because I'd really like to know whether you're going to beat Nick or not. Number two. It is during our darkest moments that we must focus to see the light.
Ooh. See, now, I think that sounds more old school. I'm going to go, yeah, Greek, ancient Greek.
You think Greek? Okay, what do you think, listeners? Keep track. That, my friend, was Greek.
Yes.
That one was Aristotle.
Okay, right, interesting.
Okay, we're moving on to number three now. I want to disappear, to get so lost that nobody ever found me.
I see those sort of tweets bloody every day. I think that's a tweet.
You think that's a tweet? Okay.
/ cry for help.
Okay, so you've got one right, one wrong so far, but number three you think is a tweet.
Yep.
That, my friend, is correct.
Get in there.
Right, number four. A writer's greatest weapon and greatest trophy, a pen.
Oh, is that a clue as to the time period?
A quill.
Oh, okay, here we go. I actually would have said Greek before, but I'm going to go tweet.
You're going to go tweet, okay. That is a tweet. You've got that correct. So you've got three out of four at the moment. Okay, number five. I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think.
Ooh. I would say, I don't think someone would tweet that, because I think you'd only be a teacher or like some sort of professor if you were saying that. So I'm going to go Greek.
You think only teachers and professors can teach other people?
Well, no, I don't think that. But I think if someone's going to tweet that, yeah, basically I don't see why any old person would tweet that. I'm just telling you, that's my logic. It could be wrong, but I'm going to go Greek.
Number five, you say is Greek. And it's Greek.
There we go.
That was, can you guess which one it was? Plato, Socrates, or Aristotle?
I was about to say Plato, but it's a guess.
Okay, yeah, no, it's Socrates, that one.
Okay.
Right, number six. The way to gain a good reputation is to endeavour to be what you desire to appear.
Wow. Yeah, I think I could see someone nowadays saying that. So, yeah, I'm going to say tweet.
You're going to say tweet? Okay. Number six, you're saying is a tweet. That is incorrect.
No!
That is a Greek philosopher. Socrates, in fact,
wow,
said the way to gain a good reputation is to endeavour to be what you desire to appear.
Wow, that one threw me. Yeah, I was convinced that was a modern day saying. Well, it shows like how ahead of their time they were back then.
They really were. It's actually really impressive, all the things that they wrote. And yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, stuff that's still relevant today.
Very relevant. Right, number seven. So you've got four more. People are like dirt. They can either nourish you and help you grow as a person, or they can stunt your growth and make you wilt and die.
Wow. Okay. To me, again, my natural instinct is to say tweet, but I was wrong last time. But I'm going to stick with tweet.
You think tweet, number seven? Number seven is a Greek philosopher.
Oh, man.
That one was Plato.
Wow, I'm losing it. I thought, yeah, because I was doing so well. I'm thinking I'm going to smash this, apart from the first one that I got wrong. Okay.
Yeah, so that one I thought would throw you anyway, because it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't sound very Greek philosopher-y, does it?
Yeah.
People are like dirt. They can either nourish you and help you grow as a person, or they can stunt your growth and make you wilt and die.
People are like dirt. If you saw like one of your best friends tweet that, you'd be like, hey.
Back off, okay?
Yeah, dirt.
Okay, that's number seven. So you're on number eight now.
Okay.
I am the wisest man alive, for I know one thing, and that is that I know nothing.
I can't see anyone nowadays tweeting, I'm the wisest man alive, but then I know what they're saying. Because I know nothing, that makes me wise. But yeah, I don't think anyone... I think if someone tweeted that these days, you'd reply saying like, what are you on about, mate? So I think that's a Greek...
You think that one's Greek?
Ancient Greek philosopher quote.
You're back on the road. That is correct.
Yes.
That one was Socrates. And I thought you would... out of all of these quotes, I'd say that's the most famous one.
Oh, I don't think I've heard it before. Well, I probably have, but I couldn't remember it.
I think out of all of that, if I was in your seat, that's the one I would know is a Greek quote.
All right, well, I got that right.
Okay, number 9. Human behaviour flows from three main sources. Desire, emotion, and knowledge.
Oh, that really could be either. I'm going to say that is tweet.
You think tweet for number 9? That, my friend,
is
a Greek philosopher.
So
you got that one wrong.
I'm not doing very well.
No. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of 9. So you're on the last one. Number 10. Before you can help to heal someone else, you have to heal yourself.
That's definitely got to be a tweet. I'm saying 100% that is a tweet.
Really? You think?
Yep.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, you can slap me around the face and chop my balls off.
Okay, that's weird. Well, lucky for you, it is a tweet. That's correct. So you've got 6 out of 10.
Yeah, okay, it's better than 5 out of 10. It's not too bad, but it's tough. Like I said earlier, that shows how relevant things they were saying back then are now. If anyone listening got all of those correct, I will be astounded. I'll be very surprised.
I was just thinking, what do you think would happen if these Greek, like Aristotle, for example, was alive today? Wouldn't we just think he's a bit of an idiot? Like if he was posting stuff like that on Instagram, we might have a modern day Aristotle, but we're just disregarding them because they're putting it on Twitter rather than writing it in a book.
Yeah, because when you hear these quotes, when they've come from like a long time ago, for some reason that adds a certain amount of like...
Mystery.
Yeah, mystery, and you think, oh yeah, that makes sense. But you're right, if someone was tweeting all this stuff now, which some people do... You do, yeah. When I see stuff like that now, I'm like, oh, come on, like, kind of stop preaching kind of thing. So, yeah you're right. How would he be taken seriously or not? Although I'm sure I heard on the walking tour, one of these guys, Aristotle, Plato, one of them, at one point he was considered an idiot and a bit of the local... Not
Joker?
Local, yeah, local. I was going to say a local drunk, but I don't think so. But, you know, the local idiot. But then only later on was taken seriously. You hear that of artists. They're only famous once they die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, because Monet was really poor throughout his life. He only became rich, per se, once he died.
There you go. But good game. Genius name. Always, we can agree, the most important thing is the name of a game.
Greek or tweets.
Very good.
Now we're going to switch things up and talk about something that's really interesting, about something that's happening in Athens and is helping a really serious world issue.
Yeah, so this place we went to is quite a special place. It's a hotel called City Plaza, but this ain't no normal hotel. It's completely free for its guests. It's full of people, music, like happiness. There's a lot going on there, but everyone is here for a very sad reason. We spoke to a volunteer, Shannon, from the UK, and a resident, Siavesh, aka Sia, from Iran. Sia will kick things off by explaining to us all, what is City Plaza?
This is the refugee accommodation. Of course, they opened it 2 years ago, in the middle of the refugee crisis in Greece, in Athens. And it was with different groups, political groups, from the beginning. But also it was some refugee, they tried to help them with together. So they opened these buildings, because this building was closed for a long time. They occupy it, they open it, they clean it, and they bring many people inside it. Until a couple months ago, it was something like 300 people that was living here.
Sia's from Iran, and then there are people from Afghanistan, a lot of people from Syria, but less so, because when the place was originally opened, they prioritised people from Afghanistan, mainly because they have less priority in other countries to claim asylum. But then in terms of volunteers, we're from everywhere. I'm from the UK, but there are people from France, Germany, America. It's really diverse. I volunteered other places before, and it doesn't feel as such like volunteering, because we all live together and work together. You're kind of contributing to a shared living space, like with your friends, rather than you are sort of, you know, helping people.
So we were talking to Nassim, and he was saying how different this is to like an NGO, for example. So could you explain the difference?
Yes, of course, it's not an NGO party or something like this. This is the accommodation. Of course, there is a support from outside of the accommodation with the NGOs, with the political parties and many groups and many people. But the situation of inside of the plaza, it's not work like an organization or how can I say, like a political party or something like this. I say this in another with other peoples also. Here, the residents, the refugees, and the volunteers, they complete with together this project, because we need each other. We need support from outside. We need support from other places, other countries, because Shannon, she is here from England, so she can give information to many people. Maybe they don't want to live here in Greece, they want to move, or other information or other things. Also, we have here some volunteers, they help people legally about many things. But about the work of inside, so this is like home for us, you know, and it's work like a home. You should clean it, you should be careful about the safe, security and everything, because we have a problem here about the attacks from the fascist groups, from the racist groups, or some not very important, but is an issue. So we should be careful about the many things.
There's a really nice quote actually at the entrance, which is something about, we're here to support, there's not a hierarchy, we're not sort of volunteers here to help helpless refugees. We're all equal, and we're just, some people in a better situation than others at the moment. So at the moment, we're offering support, but it's I think the intention of this place isn't like an NGO, it isn't like a kind of unequal relationship. It's meant to be that we're all living together and sort of supporting one another. One of the main parts of Plaza is that they don't accept help, direct financial help, from the government or from NGOs, only from private donations and from affiliations with political groups in, I think, Germany, Italy, and yeah, other supporters. I mean, we have a donation box in the bar, but I think that's got about €20 in it. So I think generally it's other groups. And because it's not owned, it's supported by a larger political group that has connections all over Europe. So that's kind of where the money comes from. But I mean, also we go to festivals, there's kind of merchandise, just general things to raise money for the space. But it's meant to be sort of, it's not entirely self-organized, but City Plaza supports itself rather than as an NGO.
What were the local people like when they set it up? Like, did they have an issue with all these refugees moving in?
In the first days, yes, because it was shock. Come on, it's a lot of people. Now they are in the hotel. Hotel was closed for a long time. And what's happened here? There is many people. So they try to explain everything to these people, to the neighborhood, what's going on here and why they occupy this building and bring many people here. And also it was a good connection between people inside of Plaza and the neighborhood, because we should understand each other. Yeah, for example, the kids going outside to play, and it's not two or three kids, it's 10, 12, something like this. And many sons and many things they do it. So they should understand each other. These kids don't have another place, and they are here with the many reasons. And also we try to teach ourselves to everyone. We should be careful about the neighborhoods. We should respect to them also. And we should understand each other. I remember someone explained it to me. In the beginnings, the neighborhood, some of them, they hitting to the children, to the kids. Don't stay here, go inside and don't wait. But after a couple of months, they bring chocolate for the kids. You know? It was very interesting.
What's been the best part about being here? Is it interacting with people who are staying here? Or yeah, what's the best bit?
For me, it's been learning about other people's cultures and stuff. When I came here last time, there was a really nice, even though it sounds a bit lame, memory of us all kind of sitting on the balcony. And in Iranian culture, you share a lot. And I think rich people probably don't as much. No. But it was just so nice. We were all sitting on the floor and like, everyone brought something from their room, like fruit and tea and stuff. And we just kind of sat there and chatted for ages. Or if it's like playing with the cat in here or like playing with the children. I don't know, I think you have a completely different experience of something that I'd be used to at home almost every day here, almost to the point that it becomes normalised. And then you sort of look back on it, and like last night at 4 a.m, I was doing a security shift learning Arabic with some guy and smoking shisha, and wow. I would never do that at home. And it sounds very almost like pretentious when you say it like that, but it's just normal life here, and normal life each day is really like vibrant.
The atmosphere is very friendly also. This is a good part of the this project in City Plaza. It's 6 months I'm here. For me, it was sad, but also I like it because it's a part of my life. I don't have another choice, but I try to enjoy it also, to find good friends here, and it was a good part of this project.
People listening, if they want to help in any way, what can they do?
Of course, I bought the money. It's very good to...
give them money.
We accept cash.
Yeah, to donate it. And it can be a very good help to here. Because now, because of the some problems, there is no many people here. And it came directly from the money issue. Because if we have a good donation, again, we can bring more people inside of the plaza and help them. But... we can find something for fix this problem. The most big problem, the most important problem is about the how the European people, how the government, the states, they attention to the situation of the refugees, because this is more important, not money. You know, we are not here for money or food or something. We can find a solution for it. We don't die, I mean, in these streets. But the big problem is about how they attention to this, how they want to fix it. Because, for example, I'm here for in Greece for 10 months, but I take my asylum paper just 3 months ago. And it was very difficult to just take asylum paper to give me a number, a date for an interview. So if they attention to these real problems and to push states, to push governments to fix it, it's going to be a big help for us.
Wow. What an incredible place.
Interesting stuff. And actually, before we went to Athens, I think I heard about this hotel like on a radio show, or it might have been another podcast, I'm not sure, but I heard about this place and I thought, we've got to go, we've got to check it out, because Greece in particular has suffered the wrong word. Greece has had to deal with the refugee crisis in Europe and the Middle East a lot, mainly because Greece is the first part of Europe you get to when you're doing that journey. So lots of refugees have come through Greece and into Europe. So that's why I thought in Athens, we have to go to this place.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that we did. So we actually emailed them a few months ago asking if we could come and have a chat and didn't get response. We tried again,
yep.
Didn't get response. So when we arrived in Athens, we thought we would make our way to the refugee hotel and just see if they would talk to us. It was good timing when we first got there. They were having a welcome meeting that night at 6 o'clock for new volunteers and new people that were coming to the City Plaza Hotel. And yeah, we came back a few hours later, sat in on the welcome meeting to understand how the place works, and then spoke to these guys.
Yeah, so it worked out really well. And yeah, like going uninvited was a bit daunting. I didn't know what was going to happen really. But as soon as we went through that front door, it was just a very friendly place. Unfortunately, we couldn't take pictures or videos there, which is understandable. There's some people there that might not want to be seen or, you know, sensitive subject, you know, the refugees. But we got this interview, as you can hear, and so glad we went. It was a really interesting place.
Like we said in the interview, you can donate. You can just head to the City Plaza website and it will take you on from there if you want to help that way, or get in touch with us if you want to get in touch with them, or through their website. You know, if you want to help, if you want to go there, then definitely get in touch.
We also spoke to Konstantinos, our couchsurfing host, about this very topic. We want to get both sides of it. He's a local Greek person. And yeah, you know, Greece has gone for a tough time. He mentioned with the economy. They've got to support themselves. They've got to support their own people as well as all these new people coming in. So, you know, you can see both sides of it. It's not easy for the Greek government. So we wanted to get Konstantinos' thoughts, being a local Greek person.
I think that I'm divided, okay? But I'll tell you that to a humanistic point, you know, there was an agreement for population exchanges between Greece and Turkey in 1919. And so there was a distraction of Izmir, of Smyrni, as the Greeks call it, in 1922, and the Greek population was pushed out of the city. There was slaughter, and it was an awful thing. When these people came, they were Greek, okay? They were living in the coastline of what is Turkey now, but they were Greek. And when they came back, they were treated like Turkish people. So the funny thing is that the Greek people treated the Greek people as strangers, and you have a lot of racism when it comes to people that are from Muslim countries. And we need to look past that, because we owe it to our own ancestors who roamed the streets of Athens like ghosts. They didn't have money, they didn't have food, and the people from Izmir were educated. They were rich back there. It was like, it was the capital of Greece regarding commerce. So it's not that we owe something to other people, but we owe it to ourselves and to our ancestry. This has been a country of refugees. It has been a country of immigrants. And honestly, we haven't managed the situation well enough. You have news about children that try to commit suicide in the hotspots. The hotspots is what they call the camps for refugees. But in my opinion, they're like concentration camps. And you have people that that fuel the hate. You have the neo-Nazi party, you have some voices that are undemocratic. And imagine that. Supposedly the economy will eventually get back. You know, you cannot have a recession or a depression forever. It's unnatural. It just doesn't happen. And then you have young people who enter a country that has a demographic problem. If they enter society and they can have a job, they can have an education, they can have everything they are entitled to, because they're human beings, you're solving your demographic problem. But you know what? When immigrants started coming to Greece, we had them working for half the money, without any insurance, without any papers. So eventually, we succeeded in lowering our salaries. Our racist worked against us. And we paid that price. Because, you know, I want to blame the church for a lot of things. They are a very... they want to bring darkness into the society. They want to bring hatred. Some of them have, you know, been Christians, and they have done awesome charitable acts. But the head of the church is pushing the Greek conservatism to the threshold. And you know what they said? They said that these young kids that you see drown in the coastline of the islands in northern Aegean, they are like Trojan horses for murderous Islamo-fascists to enter our country. These opinions have been stated in newspapers by people of the church. Yeah, so it's a big thing. I don't see how this is going to end, but we need a very strong government, and apart from the government, you need individuals to stand for it.
You think that Greece and the rest of Europe have a responsibility to look after these people?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because the alliances we make, they fight in the Middle East, they cooperate with the wrong people, they arm the wrong people there. Okay, maybe not us, maybe the states do that, but we are allies with the state. It's NATO, it's the same thing. So yeah, we have to pay for it. We have to pay, and it's the least we can, it's a small apology.
That was the thoughts of Konstantinos, our couch surfing host, who was such an interesting guy and made our experience amazing. He had quite the sense of humour.
Every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is good. Every sperm is needed in your neighbourhood. We actually live.
That is Konstantinos and myself singing along to his favourite song. He just loves Monty Python songs about sperm and semen. Like, he was constantly singing it. And now, like weeks later, I can't get the song out of my head. But we mentioned earlier, what a great couchsurfing host he was. He has made us very comfortable, made us feel at home, showed us around town, took us out for dinner, like paid for our dinner. Apparently Greek hospitality is very famous. They're very proud of it. And that was evident in him. He was a fantastic host. We had so much fun, didn't we?
Yeah, even from the first moment of meeting him, I felt so comfortable because he picked us up from the station and then we dropped our bags back and then went to a Lebanese restaurant.
Turkish or Iranian, like Persian, something like that.
Oh my goodness, guys, this food was amazing. If you want to go, if you're heading to Athens, then message us and we'll find out the name for you because it's so good, so worth going.
I do know it was in a cool part of town called New Philadelphia, a little bit out of Athens, but a really nice area, nice bars and restaurants, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was, seemed like the cool hipster kind of town, yeah. Side of town.
And Konstantinos, he had a really nice place, like a little apartment. And he loves South Park. He's always quoting and talking about South Park. So he's like, okay, we've got to watch an episode together. So like, we've got takeaway food in, watch South Park. Yeah, like we said, we just had so much fun with him. And he was, I mentioned earlier, so quick and witty. Like he's telling jokes in another language, you know, not his first language, and they're going over our head. But he said so much funny stuff. And he took us to an alternative part of town, and he took us around to see other parts of Athens, which where the university is, which is interesting.
Yeah, so this other alternative side of town is called Exarchia. I think I'm saying that right.
I think you've got it.
Exarchia.
It was a bit like...
Exarchia?
It was almost a bit like Christiania in Denmark we spoke about. A very alternative. People kind of want to live their own lifestyle there. But it's actually, it's a very intellectual place, isn't it, he was saying?
Yeah, so the university is there. And their universities actually have quite some interesting rules. So if you have committed a crime in Athens, the best place for you to run is a university.
Yeah.
Because once you're on the ground, they can't arrest you. Only one reason the police can come into the university is if you've committed murder, which I don't recommend.
Of course, no, yeah, don't do that when you're in Athens. But,
or any part of the world, really.
Yeah, that's just a rule for the whole world.
General rule, don't murder.
That's a good point. I think the law comes from, because Konstantinos was telling us, in this part of town, there's often like protests and marches like against the government and the police. There's some problems. There's, you know, a lot of friction between the authorities and some of the locals in Greece. A lot of it because of the financial crisis, you know, how the government handled it. But there's all sorts of things that have gone on. So I think really, you know, people can protest in that area of town. And if it gets a bit heated, they've got the university to kind of
seek refuge, really.
That's the word I was looking for, seek refuge. But this part of town was like full of graffiti, but it looked really cool, didn't it? It didn't look bad and run down.
Yeah, so where I would say Christiania, the place in Copenhagen, I would say was quite I felt quite unsafe there.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but they have, it's kind of a lawless society there where they sell drugs and live their own life. Where this is different, the police are still very evident. They're standing on the street corners, but it definitely feels safe. I would have felt perfectly fine walking around there by myself. I felt safe. There's a lot of cafes and it just seemed like an alternative side of town.
Absolutely. That was one of the many things we did with Konstantinos.
Oh, and also the cool thing about him is he has a pet parrot.
How do we not mention the parrot?
Called Summer, and she's beautiful. She's nice green colour. She doesn't talk. She's not one of those parrots, but she was flying around the lounge room we was eating our takeaway.
Yeah, like he communicates by like whistling to her.
So pretty much every time we was in his apartment, he just kept going...
Yeah,
making some weird noises, but yeah, it was really cool. It was a great experience.
All right, enough about the legend that is Konstantinos. We are going to miss him. We do miss you if you're listening. Do you think he is going to miss us?
This is our last day in Athens with our host Konstantinos. Are you sad that we're leaving,
mate? I'll be using my tears as lubricant.
So that was something else from my Instagram stories. Another reason why you guys should be following our stories to see all the weird and wonderful things that we get up to.
Now, we are moving on to our new feature that I told you about earlier at the start of the episode. It's called Fobservation. So faux and observation. See what we did there? Fobservations. Just little things that we see or recognise when we're travelling, because obviously we're on our big round-the-world trip now, so this will be happening quite frequently. So just a few little points that we noticed when we was in Greece. They don't like putting showers on the walls.
Yes, what is that all about?
The shower head. They never have a place for it on the wall, and even if they do, it's fixed, and it just goes, the water goes straight out the shower. They have showers where you have to like put the soap on, pick up the water, put it over you, put it back down again. It's quite frustrating.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Also, they don't have cooker hobs like we traditionally have. So they have a small little oven box that props onto a table rather than just like one big cooker that sits on the floor. I just noticed in every house.
Yeah, no, me too. It's exactly the same as what I noticed.
They like to walk in the road. Particularly Konstantinos.
That's a big one.
So he was saying that it's just too difficult to walk on the pavement because they're never straightforward. There's always stones or rocks or something in the way or works.
Or like
you can't walk.
Dog shit. Or yeah, like a tree in the in the pavement. It's true. Because after a couple of days, I just said to him, you really like walking in the road, didn't you? He said, it's just a Greek thing.
Yeah. And finally, I found Greek people have a lot of resting bitch face. But they actually have the best sense of humour. So many times we've been in like a restaurant or just walking down the street and I've seen someone and I thought, oh, they look a bit scary. I'm not sure if I can ask them the question. Ended up asking them the question and their face lights up and they're so funny and they're so nice. And just, I can't, like Greek people have were just so lovely. And yeah, I really like their sense of humour. Almost every time, the first interaction with someone, they crack a joke or they'll play some sort of prank on you. And they're just, yeah, they're just so easy and to get on with and just so ready up for a joke.
I completely agree. A bit like our British sense of humour, like banter. They like a bit of banter, don't
they? Yeah, definitely.
And of course, they shouldn't have to speak English, but because they get a lot of tourists, most Greek people we spoke to, their English was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah,
really
I'm not saying you should expect that, but of course the islands, everyone, you know, their English was spot on.
Yeah. So it's now come to the time where we mark Greece out of 10.
Interesting.
I think this is quite hard, this one, because, like, I definitely didn't hate it. Like, I really liked it. But I also didn't love it so much where I thought, I want to move here, I want to come back, explore more, this is brilliant. I feel like I really enjoyed it, but I'm not that eager to go back because I feel like it's kind of done.
You've done it.
Yeah. So this is quite difficult because I need to leave certain numbers for countries that I am going to love. So I feel my score might be a little harsh.
Okay.
So we know that I gave Cuba 0.5 out of 10 because I hated it. The 0.5 was for their beaches because they've got quite good beaches. Brazil and India for me is a 10. I feel I'm around the 5-6 mark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which sounds really harsh, but that's because I'm leaving my 7, 8 and 9 for times where I think, oh, I could live here.
So you're going to go for...
Oh, I think I'm going to go for a 6.5 out of 10. But I loved it, which sounds really strange.
I know what you're saying. I liked it. I wasn't like, whoa, this is the best place ever. It was a great start to our trip. I liked Athens more than the islands. I'm going to go for a 7. I was thinking between 7 and 8, but 8 would be for countries I enjoyed even more. 7 out of 10. It's got a bit for everyone. I really did really like it. But yeah, I'm not like, well, blown away. 7 out of 10 for me.
We would recommend anyone go there. If you are on your way there, please let us know. Or if you've been recently and enjoyed it or you didn't enjoy it, what were the reasons? Make sure you get in touch with us on our social media. What's next?
What is next? Good question.
Well, our Egypt episode will be coming out because we're currently sitting in Egypt, like we said at the beginning of the episode.
Amy, we'll not be giving Egypt a 5 or a 6. Does that mean she'll be going above that score or below?
Who knows?
I guarantee she won't be sat on the fence with Egypt.
No, not at all. Right, so as I said in the episode, don't forget you can check out our Patreon and we also have merchandise and t-shirts if you want to get involved with the show and help us on our journey to bring you more content. On our Patreon, we are now releasing videos so you can see our trip. Not only hear about it, you can see it. So I recommend you do that.
Thank you, guys. We love you.
Ευχαριστώ.
I fuck the pussy that spat you out.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with the show. You can email us at whatthefoepodcast@gmail.com. We are also on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are also on Patreon. For more information on all those things, you can go to our website at www.whatthefoetravelpodcast.com.